It's Tuesday, November 1st, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynes, did you get any good candy last night?
I handed out a lot, Joe. We to the ghosts and goblins that came to our door. We went through a couple bags. Jackie was yelling at me for giving too much out, but how can you not give so much too much candy out to all those kids?
Did any of them come to the door dressed as baseball players or Slider or Guardians hot dogs or any of your favorite baseball characters?
I think a couple came as part of Sandlot guys, kids from Sandlot. And one came as a Brown, as the Browns quarterback, or one of them. He had a Browns helmet on.
Yeah, pretty good costumes. I did see a couple of I saw on Major League Baseball Network. They showed fans who were dressed up as Nolan Ryan through the years, like all the different teams that he was on, and the Nolan Ryan who played for Texas the year he got in the fight with Robin Ventura. He had a blood all over his uniform and like a bloody nose from when the two got in a fight. So
that's the best.
That was a pretty good costume. Their baseball costumes are pretty good. Always good to see. Who knows what Slider actually is, so it's hard to dress like him. But there were plenty of fans dressed. I saw on social media dressed as the hot dogs, ketchup, mustard, and onion. So a lot of fun to be had there on Halloween with trick or treating. The biggest trick, I guess, was Mother Nature. She pulled on Game 3 of the World Series, as that was postponed due to rain in Philadelphia. But it looks like they're going to get the game in tonight. The big change, I guess, is going to be in the Phillies pitching rotation. They were going to go with Noah Syndergaard last night if they had played Game 3, but now they're going to go with Ranger Suarez, who's already pitched in the series as a reliever. He's going to start Game 3 tonight for the Phillies. The Astros are going to stick with Lance McCullers Jr.
Yeah, interesting. Cleveland fans went through this in the ALDS, and it really kind of swung the series. With Nestor Cortez being able to come back on short rest for Game 5, and we'll have to see who has the advantage, if anybody, on this rainout, Joe.
Yeah, I think it kind of gives a bit of an advantage to Philly because they're going to be able to throw Aaron Nola in game four.
Game 4, yeah.
Yeah, and then come back and just give their relievers and everybody a chance to get rested, especially if Nola is able to go a little deeper in the game. So this is the time of year where all these pitching staffs are on fumes right now. So you get what you can out of everybody and try to push them through to the end. The off day certainly can benefit both sides, but Houston's already lined up, man. They were full go and ready and rested. So I think they're not going to deviate from their plan. Dusty really knows what he's doing handling that staff.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to go with McCullers and Christian Javier in Games 3 and 4. That was, the scheduled starters go before the rainout. And I thought it was interesting, Joe, that Zach Wheeler won't pitch, at least right now, until Game 6, if there's a Game 6. And, going into the World Series, Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager, said the way the schedule was set up, they were going to be able to, pitch Wheeler and Arenado, twice. And I guess, yeah. And I guess they both still pitch twice, but I would think you'd want to bring Wheeler back if the series is on the line in Game 5, but they really want to give him an extra rest. They think he's kind of, he's fatigued.
Right. Yeah. And that was sort of the situation the Guardians faced with Shane Bieber there in a potential Game 5 was they wanted to keep him on his rest and make sure they weren't overdoing it with him. That's why they started Aaron Civale in Game 5. And it's sort of the same situation that the Phillies are facing here. Yeah, just interesting to see how this all shakes out with the World Series. Again, you mentioned Cleveland fans are definitely in tune with the you know how a rain delay and weather postponements can swing a series. So we'll keep an eye on the developments there from Philadelphia over the next couple of days, and the reports coming out of there. Last night, the Roberto Clemente Award was announced. The finalists, each team had a finalist. Tristan McKenzie was Cleveland's nominee for the award this year. But the award ultimately goes to Justin Turner from the Dodgers. Turner does a lot of good work in the community out there, longtime Dodger, and has had a lot of success with the club out there. You know, probably the most prestigious award that you can, you know, win if you're a player that has nothing to do with what you do on the field and everything to do with who you are off the field.
Yeah, for sure, Joe. It's, you know, players really, I mean, that's an award that carries so much weight, and they award it, you know, usually after what, game three or game four of the World Series, or before game three or game four of the World Series. And, you know, players take a lot of pride in that. A lot of players say, you know, that's the best award they've ever received. So I remember Jim Thome receiving it, Carlos Carrasco receiving it, you know, from as Cleveland players, and they were very proud of that.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, it speaks more, it speaks not as much about what you do on the field and really what you mean to your community and what you give back. And I think a lot of players, once they reach a certain point in their career, that's actually even more important than, you know, what they're doing on the field is what they're doing, you know, beyond the game. And so to see Justin Turner win that award, you know, good for him. And it, you know, also good for Tristan McKenzie and the work that he's done just in the short time he's been up in the big leagues. You know, congratulations again to him for being Cleveland's nominee for that. Other awards to be handed out tonight. The Guardians have five finalists at their positions for Gold Glove Awards. They've already had some success with defensive awards in this postseason. As Stephen Kwan and Miles Straw. I keep wanting to say, after that Browns game last night, I keep wanting to say Miles Garrett. I'm going to slip up and do it at least once. Miles Straw and Stephen Kwan win Fielding Bible Awards last week, and those are irrespective of leagues. So, you know, they were just giving out nine or 10 of those awards, one for each position instead of American League, National League. This time they actually have better chances to win the Gold Gloves because they've already won the Fielding Bible Award, and that pretty much is a good indicator that they're going to have success with the Gold Gloves. Let's look at Andres Jimenez, Jose Ramirez, and Shane Bieber, the other three nominees at their positions. I think pretty good chance that Jimenez and maybe even Bieber walk away with their first career Gold Gloves.
Yeah, that's an impressive array of players. I mean, five guys from one team are finalists. You know, that doesn't happen by accident. It kind of reminds me of there was a year when you know, Omar Vizquel, Robbie Alomar, and I think Travis Fryman, and there mm-hmm. might have been one other guy that won a Gold Glove with on the Indians infield. It was really, you know, that kind of, this class kind of reminds me of that, Joe.
Yeah, and just the work that Andres Jimenez has done, you know, he's a shortstop. He came over as a shortstop, and he started both the last two seasons. He started at shortstop on opening day, but then this year he quickly moved over and took to playing second base and realized, hey man, he plays really good defense and. You know, makes plays that are, you know, really sort of in tune with that position, short right field, being out there and playing up the middle. And we saw the highlights from the All-Star game behind the back flip there. I think, you know, he really is now and thinks of himself maybe as a second baseman.
Yeah, I mean, just anything he does defensively just kind of helps himself, Joe. I mean, he has really kind of, you know, really increased his value as a player. I think Cleveland knows he can play shortstop. Now he's turned himself into, you know, what possibly is a Gold Glove second baseman. And that as a player, as you kind of, you know, establish your talent and what you can and can't do, you know, right now he's off the charts offensively and defensively.
Brendan Rodgers in Colorado won the Fielding Bible Award from the National League there side of things. So, you know, probably a good chance Rodgers wins the Gold Glove in the NL. Leaves the possibility that, you know, Jimenez can beat out Altuve and Marcus Semien, who was last year's winner at the position. As far as the pitchers go, Shane Bieber, looking for his first Gold Glove. You know, defense really isn't the first thing that pops into your mind when you think of Shane Bieber, but he had a pretty good year, you know, on the mound, not just striking guys out, but fielding his position and doing the little things like holding runners on base.
Yeah, Joe, we were talking about it before the podcast. What, he's made two errors in his big league career, you know, has held 30%, you know, caught stealing rate, about 31% caught stealing rate when he's on the mound. It goes under the radar, just, you know, what a good job he does defensively. And I think he works fast. He controls the running game, and he throws a lot of strikes. He fields his position well. There was always this joke that kind of went around. You know, Mike Hargrove, every manager has favorite sayings that they like to say, mm-hmm. and Grover would always say, Bertie Tebbets, who was a scout for the Indians and a former manager, said, Bertie Tebbets always told me, show me a pitcher who can't field his position, and I'll show you a 500 pitcher. So, you know, he would say that time and time again. We all kind of chuckle at it, but it's probably close to being right, I would think.
Well, yeah, and to me, Bieber has, you know, the mechanics. He's very smooth. He can make the plays that he needs to make. I don't even think he's the best defensive fielding pitcher on his own, you know, starting rotation and his own staff. I think Zach Plesac, very much an athletic pitcher. We saw him make a fadeaway, you know, like diving into the Guardians dugout throw this year on a little tapper back to the mound and sort of walk off. That play really sticks out in my mind as a great defensive play. I think Plesac is a guy who, if given more of a look and maybe more chances, is a guy who eventually can win a Gold Glove as a pitcher. But you know, that award had been locked up by Dallas Keuchel for, you know, the last decade. I think he's won a whole bunch of American League Gold Glove awards, but he's no longer in the picture. So it's going to be a first year winner. Jose Berríos always sort of at the top of the list there in terms of pitchers defensively. Jameson Taillon, the pitcher from the Yankees, he's you remember that guy, right, Hoynesy?
don't you want me to say his pronounce his name and butcher it again?
I'm gonna try and make sure that you avoid trying to pronounce Jameson Taillon's name, but he's the other candidate for that position. The other Guardians player to be considered for these Gold Glove awards, Jose Ramirez. He's a four-time nominee at third base, but, you know, he keeps running up against Matt Chapman. I believe this year Alex Bregman also in there as a finalist. But, you know, Chapman is a guy who, as long as he's healthy and he's playing that position, it's sort of like Nolan Arenado. It's an award that's his to lose.
Yeah, I think he was like a platinum Gold Glove winner too, Chapman was a couple of years ago. So yeah, that's some tough competition for Jose. The thing I like about Jose is he never looks rushed, Joe. You know what I'm saying? You know, his throws are, you know, always kind of right. Hit the guy right in the chest, the first baseman in the chest. He's always under control. He makes it look he makes it look easier, very, very easy. And we know that's not the case all the time.
Yeah. And really the clutch plays and the big plays are the ones that really stand out for Jose this year. You know, he saved a game in Chicago with a beautiful backhanded stop and throw in a game in May. I believe that was the Josh Naylor game, the extra innings, thriller there that he won earlier in the year. They're not in that game if Jose doesn't make a play on a ball in that game. And then in the playoffs, in the wild card clinching game, he made an outstanding play that saved a run in the extra innings game. So it's not just that he makes all the plays look easy, it's that he makes them when they really count. And that is something to be considered. I just, you know, the writing's on the wall with this award. I think it's either going to be Chapman or Bregman, and Jose, you know, just an honor to be nominated.
Yeah, that play against the Rays that might be the play of the year, Joe. That was such a great play on both ends. You know, Naylor with the great stretch and Jose with the great stop and throw from foul territory at third base. Just a pressure-packed play, like you were saying.
Yeah, it's I believe Tito said that play, it wasn't only the play of the game, it was probably the play of the season. He noted that. We talked about the infield. We've been reviewing and giving the outlook on the different positions on this club as we head into 2023's offseason. So let's stay on the infield. We talked about catchers already. We've talked about the pitchers. Let's talk about shortstop. That's where Ahmed Rosario has sort of found a home over the last two seasons. It's not enough that Ahmed Rosario finds his spot in the order and, you know, has been effective in that number two hole hitting in front of Jose Ramirez. It's the combination of, I think, if you're Ahmed Rosario, you can only feel productive if you're playing shortstop every day and batting second. That's where he feels most comfortable, and I don't see a reason why the Guardians should move him out of either spot.
Yeah, I think he's found a home here, Joe. I mean, you know, okay, he's not the flashiest shortstop. We all know he has some shortcomings when it comes to range. But, I mean, day in and day out, this guy made almost every play a shortstop has to make. You know, just a very, very steady, very consistent, very reliable defensive player. And what you get on the, you know, the flip side offensively is just really sets that offense off, you know, hitting behind Kwan and in front of Ramirez. You know, that's a perfect spot for this guy. He's got speed, he can run, he can steal bases, he's got a strong arm. This farm system is loaded with shortstops. But yeah, you're right, Joe. I mean, this guy has done nothing to lose that job. In fact, he's kind of cemented himself there, unless, you know, Cleveland really wants to make a move in another direction.
Yeah, I mean, you've got prospects and you've got, you know, pressure from the minor leagues, but that's a good thing to have, and that's a good problem to have. As long as you've got a guy who's producing the way that Rosario has the last 2 years, I don't see a reason why you would want to move away from it. Now, the big question is, do they offer him some sort of extension or a contract beyond this, the final year of his arbitration eligibility, which is, you know, coming up? I got to believe that, you know, their approach that they're going to want to take here is, you know, we know we've got him, cost certainty and all that for this year. They're going to offer him a contract and maybe the 1 year deal. I don't know if they're going to, you know, be able to get a long-term deal done. If they do, it's going to be a team friendly one. And it will be one that, you know, that benefits Cleveland as opposed to benefits, you know, Rosario.
Yeah, we'll see. The non-tender date is coming up November 18th, I believe. You know, all arbitration eligible players and, you know, all unsigned players have to be offered at least, you know, a contract for next season. You know, I think, you know, I do not expect, you know, Rosario to be non-tendered. I think they'll offer him a contract. But where we go from there, you know, remains to be seen, because I think he's eligible, Joe. You know, the speculation is he could make up between 9 and 10 million mm-hmm. for this year, and which is, like you said, his last year before he's eligible for free agency.
Right. And it would take something pretty major for him to not be in the Guardians lineup, probably as the opening day shortstop. March of 2023. So I think there would have to be some big decisions and some big moves made if that were going to be the case, if he were not going to be there. Let's talk real briefly about first base, one of the areas where, you know, on that infield where they can probably make an upgrade and make some changes or make some additions to improve the club. Not saying that Josh Naylor isn't a guy who, you know, was productive there, but certainly you could probably add a little more and add a little more versatility there if you brought in somebody maybe who swung the bat from the right-hand side as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Naylor, you know, I don't know. This is a big off season for Naylor, I think. You know, how does he come to camp? What condition is he in? You know, how is his ankle hold up? You know, is he trending toward being a DH, or can he go back and play first base, what, 3, 4, 5 times a week? You know, so spring training is going to be, you know, big. Well, this offseason is going to be big for him. But yeah, Joe, I think first base is definitely a spot if you're looking to add some power. You know, this could be this is one of your spots, you know, first base or DH. And, you know, we all know, you know, they, outside of Naylor, they did not get much production out of anyone else that played first base there. I was wondering, Joe, what do you think of Arias, Gabriel Arias, as a first baseman?
Well, and that's where I was going next. My question was going to be, where does Gabriel Arias sort of fit into the future plans here? Because I think they realize that he's probably completed his development at the AAA level, and now that last step of development that happens in the majors is what he's going to be looking to do. I think having him on the roster is going to help, especially to keep Jose Ramirez fresh next year. If they can move a DH around a little bit, you know, DH Jose Ramirez once in a while, and have Arias play third base if he can be productive there. Especially against maybe when you're facing a left-handed pitcher. But can he play first base enough? I think they trusted a rookie enough to play it in the postseason as maybe probably one of their only options there. I think Arias makes the club. I think he maybe mixes in. And if they don't go out and get a big bat or get a big free agent to come and play first, I think maybe he's in the mix there and plays there quite often, maybe taking over the role in some of the games that an Owen Miller might have had had he had a more productive season.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. I thought Arias looked, you know, we didn't see him a whole lot at first base, but obviously if you play a guy in the postseason, you must think he can handle the job. And he looked very comfortable there. You know, you've got a shortstop basically playing first base, so he should be able to handle that spot. I like the way he moved around the bag. He didn't look uncomfortable there. He made a couple nice plays. And he certainly has more than enough arm to play there. So, you know, I guess you just got to see offensively, you know, what you could get from him. But, you know, what we saw, you know, not this past season where he was kind of hurt, he had the broken hand, but 2 years ago, he hit really well at AAA. So, you know, I think that bodes well. We'll see. And, you know, I was wondering, Joe, what do you think, you know, of a guy like Jose Abreu? He's going to be a free agent. It doesn't sound like he's going back to the White Sox. Is that a guy that would interest you, or is he maybe a little too, you know, kind of long in the tooth?
I mean, if you're signing him to be a DH, then yeah, certainly. I can't see it being, he's going to want a 2 to 3 year deal, right? I mean,
he's 34. 34, 36, something like that. So,
I mean, is he Cuban or Dominican? I can't remember.
Cuba. He's from Cuba.
He's Cuba. So, you know, we don't know where the birth certificate is. It's, he could be, he's 34 to 36 is a good range for some of them. Who knows? I don't know. Abreu could be interesting, but probably not cost effective for this club. I think the money would be the issue. Maybe he would love to probably stick it to the White Sox, you know, 19 times a year if he gets the opportunity to. But no, I don't know. Yeah, on paper, and you know, he would fit what they need, but probably not what they want right now in terms of you know, that sort of fitting in with what they. I don't think he'd be a good fit.
Yeah, I'd love him on a one-year deal, but I don't think you're going to get him on a one-year deal.
No, that's probably not going to happen. Tyler Freeman was up at times this year. I think maybe, is there room for Tyler Freeman and Gabriel Arias on the roster all season long? And would that hurt Tyler Freeman's development if he's not playing every day, sort of in that role that Ernie Clement occupied for most of the season last year?
You know, I like what Freeman showed. I mean, you know, I guess it depends what they do with Owen Miller. We saw Owen Miller certainly got a lot, you know, 424 at-bats, you know, so he got a chance. Now, I don't know where they go with Owen, but if you know, he's not on the ball club, if he's not on the big league roster, you know, I think Freeman, you know, Freeman should, you know, would get a look. I think they, you know, basically, didn't they say that he kind of, when they did bring him up, they said he's kind of played enough in AAA, you know, where he could come up here and ride the bench and where it wouldn't hurt him not playing every day. And I thought he filled that role pretty well.
Yeah, I thought he took to it, you know, pretty decently as well. So it could be interesting to watch what Freeman does. As for Owen Miller, I think he can be a starter for sure in Pittsburgh. That's where that's where I see Owen Miller, you know, next season. But who knows? I don't know if he does come to camp with Cleveland. I don't know that he makes the club out of spring training.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, I can't, you know, I felt kind of bad for him. He was kind of miscast as a first baseman. You know, some guys, you know, and, you know, I think he came up mostly as what, second, short, and third. And he just had some problems at first base. I don't know what it was. And, you know, he started out really well at the plate, then kind of tapered off and was just, you know, Joe, we've talked about this before. This guy hit 243. 243, mm-hmm. though, like that's, you know, MLB, I think that's probably the medium average, I think, you know, if you look at, the, you know, every MLB, you know, team hit this year. And I still don't know how he did that, you know, because he had long stretches where it just seemed like his at-bats weren't that productive. But, you know, obviously he got some hits.
Yeah, he was just productive enough to sort of justify a spot on the roster for as long as he had it. But, you know, next year they're going to want to improve in some areas, and that might be one where they'll take a look. All right, Hoynes, that's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll keep an eye on game 3 tonight, and as well as the announcement of the winners for the Gold Glove Awards. We'll keep track of those as well and report back tomorrow here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.